We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Well, hello and welcome everybody to our online event titled Ethics and Communication Challenges Facing School Leaders. Our guest speaker today is Julie Thanum. She's the Assistant Superintendent for Board and Community Relations in Carroll ISD in Texas. My name's Steve Ostler. I'm the Product Marketing Director at Blackboard, and I'm going to be our moderator today. So Julie Thanum, she's an APR Certified Communications Expert. She currently serves as the Assistant Superintendent for Board and Community Relations in Carroll ISD in Southlake, Texas. I've known Julie for some time, and I can attest to how widely she is recognized by the education community and beyond as a leader in school communication best practices. Throughout her career, she's been a strong advocate and mentor to educators across the country, both in her role as a district leader and as well as in her leadership roles in national organizations like the National School Public Relations Association and others. We could not be happier to have you with us today, Julie. And on that note, I would like to turn the time over to you.
Thank you. It's just a real honor to be here today and to talk about a topic that I've been passionate about, and actually a topic that was brought up to me by my friend Dane at Blackboard. And we got to talking about how not many people provide sessions or any kind of input on their experiences on the topic of ethics and some of the communications challenges. And so I kind of took what Dane was working on when he was working on some of his postgraduate work, and I said, we need to be talking about this. So I give him credit for bringing up the topic and for asking us to kind of do it. And I've been spending really the last year kind of discussing a little bit about ethics. And so I'm going to just jump right in, if that's all right with you. Thanks to Blackboard for the opportunity and for everybody who's taken the time out of what I know has to be a very, very busy day for you. I love when people say, aren't you off for the summer? And so we may be out of school, but a lot of times people don't realize that that's when a lot of our work really begins, either closing out a school year, having summer school, or also continuing our work proactively on behalf of public schools and school districts across the state to get ready for the new school year. So no, we are not off for the summer. We're very busy in the summer, and I appreciate your time talking about this topic. So what I really wanted to kind of dive right in is that a lot of times I think when people get in school PR positions or as school leaders, teachers, principals, in whatever role you have, that a lot of times you don't realize the ethical dilemmas and the ethical situations you're going to find yourself in. And I put up on the screen in the presentation just a few of the things that have either happened or are likely to happen. And these are things that, of course, when you decide to accept a position in education, you don't really ever anticipate that you'll have to deal with. Things like a citizen promises that, hey, I'll send you and your family on vacation if you'll rule a certain way in a student discipline case. And you know inherently that doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel like I should be given a vacation for doing something that way. And, you know, it's kind of surprised sometimes some of the things that you'll be asked or that you'll hear. Anonymous letters and complaints and things that come in and where people question the eligibility of a star athlete or something that they don't want to put their name to. You know, back in the day, we didn't even answer anonymous letters, but now if you get a complaint related to something anonymous, you have to really stop and think about, is the complaint something, a serious allegation that we have to look into? So we don't have the luxury anymore of saying, well, if you can't put your name to it, then we're not going to investigate it, because there's a lot of things that legally we have to investigate. So you know, just looking at a few more of these bullets, you're invited to consult for a company that you're doing business with your district. You know, a lot of people wouldn't think anything of that. You're offered gifts or things. You find out a teacher has been texting students after midnight. We're going to talk about some of these dilemmas, and some of them to you may not seem like a dilemma, but when you're advising other people and when you're finding yourself in an ethical dilemma. It's not as black and white all the time as people might think. And I think that's what I didn't expect in my role in school communications and in advising other educators who have to make important decisions, decisions about people's careers and about their jobs and about how the public will respond and whether or not they'll be happy with your decision or whether or not you'll be held accountable in a very real way for the decisions that you make. So, you know, just looking through some of these, you might get asked to do some things and you're thinking, you know, a taxpayer is saying your district, accusing your district of nepotism because you hired a coach's wife or someone to be on your staff. Some other slides here are examples, or you get an open records request and you just have this feeling that there are emails or texts in your personal email account. The job in education is so multifaceted now, and there's so many different scenarios. I have stopped saying, especially, that I can't believe that's happened, or that's never going to happen, or that hasn't happened, because it most likely will. And a lot of you might have experienced that in your own jobs. But when you're looking at different things, you know, and something as simple as you're out having a beer and wings with your family, and the school soccer team walks in, and you're the superintendent or you're a principal, and all of a sudden they're taking pictures of you and tweeting and taking things out of context. And I'm not here to say you should or shouldn't be drinking a beer in public. What I'm saying is, as we go through these situations, every dilemma, every ethical situation that you're put in has consequences. And the consequences of your decision or the advice that you're giving other people making those decisions, it's a very, very important part of our role as we advise individuals. So as we get into this, you start thinking, well, Julie, what exactly would you think ethics is? So like anybody else, I Google it, right? But ethics is an area of study that deals with ideas about what is good and bad behavior. But I'm going to tell you that in my experience, 27 years of school public relations and educational communications, it's a lot less about the decision between good and bad behavior as a decision between two possibly good things. And on a really tough situation, a decision between two bad things. And those were the kinds of things that I said, yeah, well, we need to be having a national conversation about how to give advice and how to really keep yourself ethical and above reproach in some of those situations. So it isn't always just good and bad behavior. I think a lot of people think, well, if you're ethical, it just means you tell the truth. There's a lot more to that. And being ethical is also about transparency about the truth. Sometimes there's confidential information and you can't share all the truth, but you're accused of not sharing all the truth. So there's a lot more to the issue of ethics, and I'm going to dive into a few of those here, and hopefully we'll have some questions come up. I have no doubt that you have scenarios that you could share by all our listeners, and I'm going to try to give you a very real picture of some things that have happened, some things that we've dealt with, and how we can challenge ourselves to be people of very high ethics so that when we're giving advice to other individuals, we're giving very good and sound advice. So as we get into it, I wanted to tell you that I did a little research as part of, obviously, a school PR person. I got the four-part, the research and the planning and the implementing and the evaluation is a very important process to us as school communicators and in the APR process. The Institute for Global Ethics, if you didn't know there was an institute, Google them, take a look at some of the studies they've found. But I think when you ask people why are ethical decisions important, these are four points that are very, very important. Making good ethical decisions, it just fosters positive employee morale. When your employees feel good about the decisions that you're making for students, the decisions that you're making on their behalf, and especially on behalf of the general public and the taxpayers, when they feel good that your decisions are being made with for the right reasons and that they're ethical, the morale stays high. And I don't know if you've experienced in your job low employee morale, but we have had times during my career of pretty low employee morale. And most often it went back to communication issues and issues of lack of trust. So you're going to hear me talk a lot about truth, transparency, and trust, and how all of those work together when you're looking at ethical decision making. But it also boosts your brand reputation. And we know now more than ever before with the competition for public education and public schools that brand reputation is very important. And you stop and think of a marketing sense, and you start thinking about just your favorite soft drink and the first one that comes to mind. And we won't go there, but I know when you start looking at marketing, who is on that top rung of the marketing ladder? And you want your district to have a brand reputation where people know that ethical decisions and the values that you have are represented in the decisions that you make. And so that's another important piece. Another thing they found in the research is that making ethical decisions encourages loyalty in your customers and employees. And really, that's what it's all about. You want your graduates, you want your sponsors, you want your taxpayers, you want your parents, you want your own employees to feel good about the organization and to be loyal to your organization, because that is the type of environment that people want to work in, especially if you do a lot of research on millennial workers and the millennial generation. Smartest generation, most educated generation of individuals, but they really want to be a part of a cause. And they're not just going to work somewhere for 30 years because you stayed with a company for 30 years. They want to believe in their values, and they want to believe that who they're working for, they can make a difference. And that's very important to a lot of generations, but especially this millennial generation. And also, it improves your bottom line. When it really comes down to it, if you are looking at educating kids and taking care of kids and taxpayer dollars, ethical decision making is a key part of that. So ethics is not just, you know, the right thing to do, but it's the smart thing to do as you're leading in school communications. So when you actually think about, well, so what are some are the ethical principles? You know, what are things that we need to think? So when I say tell the truth, that seems to make sense. But you'd be surprised how many times that I have seen situations where people actually were not truthful about their role in a situation or about what happened, or they failed to give you all the information. And so truth telling shouldn't have to be a bullet in a presentation on ethics, but it's there, and it's the first one. So you've got to tell the truth. You've got to be willing to say the hard things sometimes. And I think in our roles in education, we got to make sure. I tell my boss all the time, there are a lot of people that tell him what he wants to hear. He needs someone on his staff telling him what he needs to hear. And I have always said that with my bosses, and it's a hard thing to do, because sometimes you have to go in and you have to tell them hard things. But telling the truth is just a foundational to having strong ethics. Simple things in your day-to-day work, like citing your sources, getting permission to use things before you use the work of others, giving people credit, where you get your research, where you found things out. You know, there's not very many unique ideas anymore. And if you are asking someone, we'd like to borrow that idea, we'd like to use that idea here, it's just an ethical thing to do, to give credit where credit's due. And I think that's very important. Being loyal to your organization, and that is something that a lot of people will have loyalty to their school district, their, even in corporate communications, there's a lot of loyalty. But what you have to be really careful of is that while you're loyal to your organization, you're not loyal to the point where you are not protecting the public interest. You've got to also have this balance between loyalty to organization and protecting the public interest. And so this is not as hard for people in school communications or in roles where they've come out of media or journalism. I have a journalism degree, so they talk a lot about that in my coursework about protecting the public interest. But a lot of times people will make decisions based on loyalty, what's in the best interest of the organization. And while you do certainly want to do that, you have to balance it. What is the public's right to know, or protecting that public interest when it comes to taxpayers? We say a lot in education, and certainly isn't our own statement, but that we deal with two of their most precious assets, and that's their tax dollars and their kids. And so we have a responsibility to make sure that we're protecting that public interest. Not releasing confidential information sounds like a no-brainer, but I also have run across during 27 years of education, people who just can't keep their mouth shut about things they know about. And when I say that, it's like they have to talk. People talk. Power is information. And as a school communications professional in your role in making ethical decisions, you have to be a confidential person. So you have to know the law. You have to know what can be shared, what should be shared, and you have to make those decisions on a regular basis. And so it's really an important piece of the decision making. You don't want to misrepresent yourself, overstate your qualifications, overstate your district. especially things that people can go back and fact check on. And again, these things sound like no-brainers. It's not going to sound like rocket science, but it's things we don't talk about. And it's things that in a day-to-day basis, when it comes up, sometimes you find yourself. I've heard people say, this is the first I've ever heard of that. And I know it's not the first they've heard of it. So in just simple things and the way you respond, you just have to be careful. And being transparent and forthcoming, sharing all the information that you're able to share. You guys all know you have those situations where you ask your kids questions and they give you information, but they don't always tell you everything. If you've been a parent of a teenager, you know that you have to ask the right questions or you won't get all the information. And so that is just important in your job as well. Treating other people fairly and not showing favoritism, not only if you're dealing with the media or members of the public, just being a consistent person. You know, I say often that my response to ethical situations should not surprise people. If it's surprising people, then I don't have a history of being consistent. And consistency in leadership is very, very important. And you want to be able to listen to everybody, but you've got to be careful that you're treating everybody fairly and that you are consistently responding the same no matter who it is asking you. And this comes up a lot. We'll have sponsors. I say in my marketing, you have a situation in marketing where a sponsor says, oh, come on, you can do that for me. I'm one of your, you know, we're special. We support the district. But if I tell one sponsor they can do something and not allow the other sponsor, that's not treating them fairly or consistently. So these are little ethical things that you'll find yourself as you go along. Not making promises that you can't keep. Things that you say, oh, we'll take care of that, or we'll make sure that happens for you. You have to be very careful not to overstate not only your own decision-making authority, but you're speaking in a lot of cases on behalf of your school district. You are the district spokesperson. That is a huge responsibility, and you really have to be careful that you're not promising things that you can't deliver on. Disclose your identity. I've heard people say, well, I'll just, you know, create a Twitter account that people won't know it's me, and I'll go out and say positive things about the district or things like that. It always shocks me what people are willing to do, and I understand that's a tactical kind of thing that some of you out there might have known that someone has done. I believe you should always disclose your identity when you're dealing with people, whether it's on social media, anywhere. You should always disclose that you work for the district. Don't pretend to be someone else. Don't set up an account, or, you know, in an election or anything else to try to make your situation, your school district, whatever, look better, and not disclose ethically your association with the school district and why. You know, when you're receiving a paycheck from your school district, of course, then people would expect you to be loyal. They would expect you to say good things about your district, but your consistency, I think, is very, very important. Not accepting gifts or favors, and I do think there's a difference, and so you understand, I do think there's a difference between relationship building. So relationships is one of our core values of our school district, and so even with sponsors, I want to build relationships with sponsors. So if a sponsor, for instance, invites you to dinner or things like that, what you have to understand is what's the expectation for that. And so you can accept and build relationships with sponsors and with others, but you have to be careful that they're not trying to give you gifts or favors that will use your position for either personal gain or to gain an edge in your district. And those are just very, very important things you have to be careful of. Disclosing any conflicts of interest. You know, we talked about, can you, you know, do a presentation or represent sponsors or a vendor that your district does business with? You can, you just have to make sure that your district knows that that's what you're doing and your supervisor and get permission. A lot of times, disclosure alone takes care of the ethical dilemma. Something that you have not disclosed ought to be a first red flag, that if you're hiding it, that it might not be the best decision. So moving on, when we look at school public relations, you know, the National School Public Relations Association, just an amazing organization. If you don't have somebody in your school district that's a member of INSPRA, you want to be, and I put in a plug, telling you that I'm INSPRA president, the whole reason that I agreed to even run for office in at a national level, and I've been an officer at a state level in TSPRA and here in Texas, is because I learned so much for this organization, and this is the organization that really has helped me shape and form how I do my job in here in Carroll and in previous districts. So they, INSPRA is just invaluable. And they would tell you that a systemic two-way communications effort regularly engages internal and external stakeholders. That ethical dilemmas ought to be a part of an ongoing discussion that you have in your communities because you have an ongoing daily relationship and ongoing two-way communication process with your stakeholders. So they shouldn't just hear from you when something goes wrong and you expect them to trust you. You should have been building that trust up day after day after day by having a strong communications program. And so there's so many different topics that ethical dilemmas can come up, but that your school public relations program should already address. Whether you're talking school safety issues, and they ask you questions and want to know more about the procedures, about drills and things that you train your staff on, whether it's about budget cuts, getting input on your school calendar, Blackboard and other organizations have lots of different ways for you to engage your community. And hopefully in your school district, you're already doing that. So I had to put a strong plug in there that if you are faced with an ethical dilemma and your district is making a decision that's very, very important, that stakeholder involvement and two-way communication is the way for you to ensure that when you do make a final decision, one that maybe some people will support and some people won't, that they feel better if they've been involved along the way in that process. And there are a lot of the things that you see there on the screen, dress code changes, policy changes, things like that, and you can do that. Well, one of the areas that you can't do that as much is personnel matters. And so you are held to a lot of confidentiality in personnel matters. Now, there are some personnel matters that you do need to be transparent about and share. You need to show the steps you're taking to avoid future situations, but there could be portions of that matter that you legally cannot share. And that's an ethical dilemma. You could be being interviewed. You could have a taxpayer asking you questions or a parent. One parent asking you questions about another student, and you cannot share that information and violate federal law under the Family Education Rights and Privacy Act. So there's lots of issues where you're limited on what you can share. And especially with dealing with reporters, I'm honest with them. I will tell them, if I am able to answer your question, I will be as transparent and truthful as I can. If I cannot answer your question, I will tell you that there are restrictions on confidentiality, that I have to follow the law. And I think that people know that when you're consistent like that, they understand that. They may not always agree, and they may want you to share more information, but they tend to understand where you're coming from. So we're going to get into four C's, four important C's of the first being culture that I think really kind of help in your ethical dilemmas. Establishing and reviewing your educator code of ethics. I've put the code of ethics out there before and I've showed it to people and I give them an ethical dilemma and they'll be like, wow, this is great. Can I get a copy of this? And sometimes they don't even realize it's already in state policy, district policy. So if it's probably been a while, I would encourage you to go back and establish and review your educator code of ethics. Sometimes people unknowingly violate code of ethics without even realizing it. I'll give you one example. The Innsbruck code of ethics say that you won't say disparaging things about another, colleague. And so you need to know what the district's code of ethics, the state educator teacher code of ethics say, and you need to review those with your staff. And we have done, much like we do crisis tabletop scenarios, we actually have started doing ethics scenarios, and we'll give our principals an ethics scenario and they've worked through it. And wow, we can have six different tables and they will come up with six different ways that they would respond. And you know this to be true through your crisis training, because in crisis training, you know that every individual decision that's made has a consequence. It's the same way in dealing with ethical dilemmas. So you want to establish and review your educator code of ethics. I think you have to provide training. We do not do this enough. It has been eye-opener to me this year. How much more of a discussion we need to have on the topic of ethics, making difficult decisions, giving good advice to school leaders, and doing the right thing, do the right thing, do the right thing, and then tell people. That's an old Innsbruck adage. I don't even know who said it originally, but I know that it came in the wits and wisdom of Innsbruck. And so you've got to provide that training for employees. It does not naturally come to people. And you know this because you can put 10 families in front of them and the ethics that they have are different from each family. And quite frankly, I had a teacher look at me one time and say, my ethics and your ethics are not the same. So, I don't know what to tell you, but that's, I'm perfectly willing to do what you just said you would never do. And it was an eye opener to me. But it's a reminder that everybody's ethical and moral compass is can be a little different. You got to talk about expectations for truth and transparency. It's got to come from the top. And I'm very fortunate our superintendent, our school board, we have developed a culture here in our school district that we're going to talk about difficult subjects, and that we're going to be very transparent when we can and be truthful. There are times when it involves student discipline, when it involves personnel matters, that it's very difficult because we would like to say more, but we know that it is not always best or legal to say more. And so you do find a little bit of trying to find a balance between litigation and what you can say. But that's when the advice you give and the response that you give in an ethical dilemma becomes all the more important, because you may not be able to share all the facts. So the way that you present it is going to be very, very important. You got to set a good example as a leader, and this is tough. All of us want to be people of character, but definitions of what people of character are, I know, are different. But you have to set a culture that your leaders are going to do the right thing. If you expect your teachers and your students to act a certain way, then you've got to set that culture from the top down. And so if they see things allowed or things being done that they believe are unethical, it's very hard for them to stay committed to a culture of strong ethics if they're not seeing that modeled by the people that are their supervisors. And I think you got to take some time to celebrate and recommend when somebody does something well, when somebody's honest and comes out and says, "We made a mistake. We're going to do better next time," or "This is not the best way we could have handled that." I think when you do that, you have to recognize and commend others. And our superintendent starts off our monthly leadership meetings with all our principals and directors and coordinators with some times of celebration and recognition. And we take time to do that. And I think it's very, very important for your organization. The second C is character. I think you have to establish, and I've talked about this a lot. My superintendent came in 2006, and we were a great school district when he got here, but we're an even better school district now because one of the things he insisted on was establishing core values. And I have said this often during my 2 years as president and president-elect and president of INSPRA, but it's been the single most impactful thing on my communications and marketing program here in the district was for our superintendent, our school board, and our leadership team to work with our parents, and to work with students, and to work with teachers to establish core values. You see the core values for our school district down at the bottom of our slide. They're excellence, relationships, character and integrity, innovation, open and honest communication, and compassionate service. And we just added compassionate service a couple of years ago when we went through the strategic planning process. Our core values have become so integrated into everything we do. I can use them in personnel matters. I can use them in making budget decisions. I can use them when we sit down with my staff and somebody says, "We need to go buy this new piece of technology." I ask, "How does it support our core values?" And they're used to me asking that question because I get it asked by my bosses. And so you want to identify your non-negotiables. What is your district about? What is the foundation, the things that are you are unmovable on? And I'll give you one example of how the use of core values can handle in a personnel matter. So you have a situation where a staff member does something they should not have done, and you had to take action. And the first thing that happens is the media or a parent or someone, they chime in and they want to know, what was done to this. We want you to talk about this situation. What's the district going to do about it or whatever? And I am limited by confidentiality, probably the possibility of litigation. I'm limited by some of the things that I can share, some things that might be protected information. It might be about students, it might be about student discipline. I can actually say, "I'm sorry, I can't comment on that particular individual or that particular situation, but I can tell you this is what it means to be a Carol Dragon. These are our core values." And I can say that let me give you an example. If you have a staff member that has an inappropriate relationship with a student, you can then say, "That is not who we are. That we are about character and integrity, and we are about relationships, but positive relationships that help students succeed and help them achieve their highest abilities." And so we can talk about what it means to be a dragon, and we don't have to talk about that individual situation or specifics. We give a core values presentation on our mission and vision from the moment our new hires walk in the door. It's one of the first things they hear on the morning of new hire orientation. The superintendent and I, we spend a lot of time talking about this is what it means to be a Carol Dragon. And I think setting that culture and explaining what we mean by being people of character, what we mean by compassionate service, and we kind of define for them what it means to be excellent. And I think those are your non-negotiables. I think as a leader, you need to be a centrist. And I've seen so many examples of leadership where they don't do this. I'm not talking about being wishy-washy, so I want to be careful that I'm clear there. You want to be collaborative, but if you are so far to the right or left in your community as a leader, if you're not a centrist a little bit and you can't work with everyone, then you're going to find yourself in ethical dilemmas, because special interest groups, especially groups of individuals, and let me give you an example of that might be. It might be the religious faith community. It might be gifted and talented parents. It might be your athletic boosters. Somebody is going to ask something of you, or your superintendent. They're going to ask something of you that you're not sure that you should do, or they're going to want you to do, take a stand on some issue. You have got to learn to be one of those friend to everybody. And I couldn't use my superintendent as a better example. He's such a great example of this. He came into a community that was pretty polarized and divided at the time. He is a centrist. Now, he can be strong when he needs to be strong, but he literally has endeared himself to everyone. And it's very genuine and it's very sincere. He's about all kids. He's about helping kids with special needs. He's about kids from different races and cultures and backgrounds. And I think you have to be collaborative. And so I think that's a word, that's another C word. But as part of your character, being a centrist, I think, is just an awesome thing. You got to be consistent. I think I talked a little bit about that, but I think your response to difficult situations shouldn't be a surprise to people. I've actually had people come to me and say, I know what you're going to say. That should be a real compliment. Because that really means that they know consistently how I'm going to handle a problem or how we're going to problem solve. And so I think that's very, very important. You have to be confidential. You have to, you know, I said I haven't worked 20 years for my current school district without being able to be confidential about the things. But I've also pushed people to be transparent and to share information. And at times when we've had to apologize that we didn't handle something really well, to try to do that. And so you do have to protect student information greatly. And it's very, very difficult in some situations, because you'd like to share the facts about why you made a decision that you did or why you didn't act in a certain situation, but you can't always share that. And you got to kind of consider if your district does not have core values and you're not in a position of influence to move them towards that, then you can have your own personal core values. You can say, this is what I'm about. You can also have your department. You can go to your staff and let them be a part. Who are we? What are we about? And you can actually set the culture and the character in individual departments. And so I love to see them on the wall. I love to see them. We've got our core values printed on everything. And when I mean everything, I mean everything. I could show you examples of different things that are right here in my office that are sitting right here. I've got compassionate service on a cup right here. And so we send that message out and we let people know what we're about all the time. I think it's very, very important. And so you want to communicate them once you establish them. So it doesn't just have to be your district. It can be you. It can be your department. But I think it's very, very important. The third C is communication. This probably should stand to be obvious again from all of our individuals that are in communications positions or have to do educational communications. But I mentioned the four steps, and I'm going to put them up here real quick so you can see them. That researching your key audiences and what your target messages are is so critical. You know, I've heard from my good friend Leslie in Alabama that they've been kind of changing this to a three-step process, but only because they put planning and research so intertwined that they put it now in one step. So you can't miss that piece. But it's research, planning, trying to figure out what the meaningful engagement's going to be with your students, your staff, and your community. It's going to be two-way. What are their opportunities for giving you feedback before you make the decision? So a lot of times we like to go out and communicate to people what we've decided. Real, true, authentic engagement means that you're talking to people before you make those decisions. Implementing ongoing communication with consistent and redundant target messages. And redundancy is so important. That's why we put our core values on everything. I promise you, if we pulled students in right now and said, what are the Dragon core values, they could probably recite them to you. We are that redundant with our message because we want them to know what it means to be a Dragon. This last year, a student actually stood up in a public presentation and he had written what the core values mean to him. So that's huge. So you got to evaluate regularly for effectiveness and understanding and establish that credibility. And that's my last C, being likable and believable. You want to become known as a person of high standards, that consistency. You want to act first. You only have one chance to be the one to tell your own story. Self-report, go in, tell someone, tell them we need to go to the community. Don't wait for someone to find out something before you explain what happened. If you have information that you need to work with, I think the credibility is huge for you to be the first one to tell your story. Find someone you trust as a sounding board. I call colleagues and I'll say, okay, this is the approach I'm thinking about walking in and telling the superintendent. Is it sound? Does it sound good? Is it what you would do? But you really have to find someone that you trust and can give you great advice. Apologize if you've done something to lose the public trust. And you may just have to say, we're sorry that we didn't handle this in the best way. Here's the steps we're going to take going forward to do that. If you're an ethical school leader, these are, again, some of the things just to keep in mind, and you can kind of take a look at those. Following the national, state, and local laws. Know your district policy. I can't tell you how many people don't even know what their policies are. I'm the policy person now in Carol ISD, so this summer I'm going to spend a lot of time really researching and rereading a lot of the policies, even though I've worked here for 20 years. It's important for you to know what the policies are. Protecting the civil and human rights of all individuals. School ought to be a place where it's safe for all kids, all kids. There's a lot of national dialogue on this right now, but school ought to be the one place of unconditional love and acceptance. And that's probably a whole nother webinar, but I think it's very, very important that you have to champion that. Ensuring neutrality in bond and trustee elections when you're asked to show favoritism. I've heard of people getting in trouble because they supported certain candidates. And I'm just going to tell you, your neutrality in those types of things are very, very important. Yes, you probably do have someone that you would like to see on the board or like to see off the board, but that's not your role. Your role is to serve the people that are on the board and get elected. And then so I would just encourage you to stay out of those kinds of ethical dilemmas. Deal honestly with your reporters and your media. Honor your contracts and your commitments. And you really function as the conscience of the district. There's another C there that's very important. And you have to be the one to go in and sometimes hold them accountable and tell them, no, we've got to talk about this and we need to explain this to our employees and so forth. I think you got to be aware of your personal influence. And some of us have pretty strong influence in our districts if we've been here a while. Some of us aren't to that level yet. And so that all throughout my career, I've had different levels of influence. And so you have to scoot your chair to the table. You may not be there yet. You may not be an assistant superintendent where you have real weighted input into a decision, but you have to be very careful of your personal influence and avoiding promises and unprofessional advantages. And it's just very, very important for you as you're going through. I think you have to be careful of accepting different things like fees and commissions, gifts, and all those types of things. I kind of mentioned that. You got to safeguard all your confidence, and you got to work really hard not to damage the reputation of others. I'm a big believer in that old adage: if you have a problem with someone, you go to them. You don't talk to other people about it, you go to them. And I think that's a very, very ethical and important thing to do as a school leader. And I ask people that a lot. Have you gone to the person that you're, I kind of serve as mediator sometimes, and I'll say, have you gone to the person and explain that? Well, a lot of times I haven't even talked to the person they're upset with. And I know that can be tough. There's a slide here, and I won't get into all these slides, but I know that you will get the opportunity to download them and have them. The ethics decision-making process, I came across this slide, and I think it's a really good thing. That you kind of are presented with a dilemma and some of the things that you walk through, kind of trying to figure out what's the best decision here. I said before that sometimes it's a choice between two good things and you're trying to pick the best thing. Sometimes it's a choice between two bad things and it's not a win anyway, but you're going to go with the one that you feel like you can manage the best, either PR-wise or legally-wise. So once you make your decision, you have to be able to justify it. I think I used just this week, as we were trying to make some decisions in our own school district, what is defensible? So you have defensible legally. And so a lot of times we ask our attorneys, our school attorneys, how can we, defend this? Or can you have to ask your school communications or PR person too, is this a defensible position? And if you look at someone and you say, I cannot defend you if you make that decision, it's very, very important for you to be honest with them and tell them that. Because otherwise they could be making decisions that could affect their career and the careers of others. I've heard this said before, that integrity is who you are when no one is watching. I think it's one of the best examples of if no one pays attention to any decision you ever make, are you still going to do the right thing? And I think that's very, very important. First Amendment and your rights of free speech. I tell people all the time, you have the right to free speech, but the consequences of that free speech might be different. So getting to keep your job, and so forth. You know, I'm a proponent and a very strong person on the First Amendment. I have a journalism degree hanging on my wall over there. It's very, very important to me that you have the right to free speech, but your employees need to know what their rights are and what can happen if they violate policies of the district when it comes to speaking their mind. And this is a very, very important thing. And, you know, we could spend again a whole other webinar on that. when you're dealing with special interest groups, and I want to touch this and we'll get into some questions. When you're dealing with special interest groups, you know, I encourage face-to-face dialogue, but I don't like the mob scene. So I don't like one person meeting with 40 people. I also don't like 10 or 6 district leaders meeting with two parents. So I think you need to really think about that, is that an even dialogue, that kind of face-to-face. If you're really there, you got to really listen to what they want to say. You've got to model and encourage kind of respectful dialogue to them. And you got to ask them. And I've heard this from one of our former assistant soups that said, he's a superintendent now in another district, what would be your 100? If you could score 100 here and we could do what you wanted us to do, what would be that 100? And then you start from there. And you're not always going to be able to do what they want you to do. And it doesn't mean giving in. It means finding common ground and being honest. Don't make promises you can't speak and or keep. And sometimes you have to say, I cannot promise you the school board will do that. I will tell you that we'll take your concerns to them. It's that type of thing. And you got to realize and accept not everyone's going to be your fan. Disclosing, I mentioned this early on, that disclosing things sometimes takes the ethical problem out of it. As long as you're trying to hide something or you're not sharing something, that ought to be a red flag. And I used to tell that to my kids as a parent. If you're trying to hide something from us, it's probably the first sign that you shouldn't be doing it. But the same is true in your professional role as well. These are some things that, boy, in and of themselves, they could be full webinars, but you really need to know the Open Meetings Act, the Public Information Act, FERPA, child abuse reporting requirements, copyright, trademark, and fair use. Those are all very, very important things that you are just expected to know in your role as an educator and school communications person. Digital citizenship and how we respond to things on social media is huge. I've heard it said, tweet others as you want to be tweeted. I think that's a good rule of thumb. I don't believe in mocking people on social media. I believe engaging millennials and especially our students. I do think it can be fun, and I don't think it has to be very formal and official all the time, but you need to really think about your time, tone, and your turf. Is it the right venue? Is social media the right place to have that conversation? Is the tone of your tweet or the tone of your post what you intend it to be? And have somebody else read it. You know your policies, know what you're allowed to say. Are you allowed to tweet about district matters on your personal account? All of those things have to be addressed in policy. And you have to know the difference between your personal and professional goals. Social media, a lot of times your state standards will have a definition of inappropriate communications with students or minors. Know these policies. And, you know, there's an inappropriate test. Again, what's the nature and purpose of your communication? Is it subject matter? Was it at a time when you were trying to make it private or public? Is it after midnight? You know, is it sexually explicit, anything like that are very, very key things I think that you need to think about. This is a really great guide, and I'd love to say that I did it, but I didn't. It's actually, I found out that it's originally, I think it came with the U.S. Air Force, who has a very, very strong social media policy. And it walks you through whether or not you ought to respond in ethical dilemma. If you email me, I'll be happy to send you this original document. This is the one we use for Carol ISD. But it basically says you've discovered a post about you or your district. Should you comment? Should you not? But one of your first thing, is it positive or balanced? If it is, then you go over and evaluate whether or not you want to comment on it, leave it alone, or, you know, like it, those types of things. If it isn't positive or balanced, then you walk through a series of tests on whether or not is this site credible. You know, I have someone call me and say, somebody said something about us and I'm very, very upset. And I'll go and they have 5 followers. I hate to say it, but if that circle of influence for that poster, I don't have time to deal with 5 followers. If they've got 5,000, 500,000 followers, I might be more prone to go back and try to correct misinformation. So we don't always comment when special interest groups or people start attacking us on social media, but I will say we have a really good response that we give. And a lot of times we address it through other responses, but we don't engage people back and forth on social media all the time. I know that's a session in and of itself, but ethically, you've got to kind of have something that you walk through. And you got to set your standards, and you got to say, you know, we don't reply to every single negative thing that's said about us. We have thicker skin than that, and we're okay with ourselves. Now, if we've made a poor decision or someone has misinformation out there, and correcting that information can help people better understand why we made an ethical decision or why we made the decision we did, then certainly we will go out and we will post and say, this is our policy from the district, or here's the information, or by the way, this is a great thing. Here's someone you can call and talk to about this. And I think that's a great way to kind of stop the ongoing back and forth on social media. It's just to say, you know, we understand you had a bad experience with us. Here's our phone number, call us, you know, let us work through this and do it that way. And so this is a really great chart. I encourage you to look at it. Again, from the U.S. Air Force, they got a great social media response. When you think about how many Air Force, retired Air Force and active Air Force people there are all across, you have to have a very strong social media policy. Otherwise, everybody would be out there saying things, tagging the Air Force, and the Air Force would think that they're responsible for it. It's no different in a school district, no different in a school district. So think carefully before you respond. Don't respond too quickly. Double check your facts. It never looks good to be sarcastic, to be too snarky. You, with the millennial generation and with students, you can have fun with it, but never do anything that's going to demean them or publicly embarrass them or be too snarky. And there are people who have lost their jobs over tweets. And there's also people that have been applauded for being very real in their tweets. So the question is, in any given day, which one are you going to be? Is it going to be something that people think you did really well, or is it going to be something that you lose your job over? I don't like to get in the back and forth over a battle of words online. So we may say this is not for debate, but this is the policy. If you'd like to call us or send us a, you know, complaint, you can do that. But we're not going to debate it on social media. I think that's important. Be empathetic with people. Try to look at situations from where they're coming from. And then just kind of sharing your contact name and number, I think, are all good things. Here's some additional resources. PRSA has some, INSPRA. There's actually an ethics app for PRSA, and you can, it's available, free to download. It's kind of cool to go in there and answer some of their questions. Those are just a few. I know, believe it or not, I'm to that point where I know we might want to have some questions or look at some things. I certainly want to be available if there's any way that I can help. I didn't get into a lot of scenarios because that can take a lot of time, but I tried to just give a big brief overview, but would be happy now to answer any kind of questions that we might have. We have Steve there.
Yep. Sorry, I was just going to say, someone commented during the presentation. They said, I've been so busy listening, I forgot to speak. And I think there are probably a lot of us that would totally agree with that. We did get some questions that came in, and I'll bring those up. But I also want to just encourage people. We've got a little bit of time here. Feel free to continue submitting questions, and we'll get to those as we have time as well. A question came in about principals talking about a teacher to other teachers and allowing the teacher to suggest where a teacher should be placed in the school. Would that be considered an ethical issue? And if so, do you have any recommendations for how that should be handled?
I think it's very, very important that when people are going to bring you concerns or information and want to discuss other staff members, other parents, other students. And I think that you have to be consistent in making sure they understand that you'll talk about policy, you'll talk about procedures, you'll talk about why we make decisions the way we do, and that what you won't do is that you won't share information about other staff members that or other students and parents. And I know this is hard. You think about them walking in and they're having a conflict with a teacher, or they're upset about something a teacher's doing, so they come and tell you about it. How are you even supposed to address it? You know, it becomes hard. But I think going to the individual is huge. And so I think a lot of times a principal needs to act as a little more of a mediator. And I think that they have to make sure that they're hearing all sides. And so it's either a group meeting or a meeting with multiple people involved, or the principal needs to meet with not only the person filing the complaint or not filing a complaint, raising the issue, but you also have to meet with the other person. You got to get all sides. And I think we spend a lot of time, I really think a lot of time, having to really work through very crucial conversations. And if you've never read that book, that is an important training that we're doing in our district, because it's really helping teachers and staff members understand that you have to have hard conversations. But I think that you can address even bullying, grades, different things like that, the way that a staff member is handling something. But you have to consistently be known as, protecting other people's reputations. And so that doesn't mean protecting things when somebody did something wrong, but it does mean saying, I would like to give that person an opportunity to explain, or I will, I've listened to your concerns. I'll go to that individual and I'll find out, you know, what more facts. And you got to try to work through and resolve problems that way. But I think that there are times that you're going to have confidential information. And you're going to, I've gone to my boss before and I said, I have some information. I can't necessarily tell you who I got it from, but trust me that this is information that, you know, we need to think about when we're making this decision. So if people trust you and they trust your confidentiality, you can't do everything based on anonymous complaints or not, you know, being anonymous, but I think that you can manage through situations and kind of maneuver yourself through those situations by still protecting the interests of everybody involved, not just the person. And, you know, we're kind of bad in education, and I say this, we collectively, in education, we're kind of bad about if a parent raises a complaint or a concern, then they have that reputation for being a complainer. We have to protect them as well, that they have the right. And if we're going to engage people, we can't be afraid when they bring a concern to us. And we have to protect them and say, no, we've asked for their opinion. We've asked for them to share concerns with us. We can't be mad at them and upset when they do that. So I don't know if that helps at all, but I think really trying to protect the interests of everyone involved, I think, is important.
Great, great answer. Another question here. I want to get to as many of these as we can. This came from more of an ed tech background. The question was, we hire independent contractors to help with curriculum development who may or may not be in districts that our product supports. Does that create ethical issues or advantages? And I think just to make sure we understand that question correctly, I think the question really is around district staff, teachers, et cetera, who may be moonlighting with outside, you know, acting as an independent contractor. Where do those ethical lines, where would you draw those ethical lines?
Well, I think it's important to understand what your number one role is. And, you know, for me, and I just give my number one role is to Carroll ISD. And so anytime I've agreed to do anything, I disclose it and I find out, is there any concern or is there any problem with me sharing, you know, even this presentation? I said, I'm going to talk about things. When we go out and do the presentation in person, I even talk about scenarios that we've faced in our district, but they're all public scenarios. They're scenarios that have even been in the newspaper or people know about. And so I think it's important for you to think about what your role is. I think disclosure is huge. I think you really need to ask yourself, is this putting me or my organization or the vendor in some sort of a conflicting situation? Or are they trying to use this in getting me to make a decision, spending money for the district for their product or other products, whatever? So, you know, it's how you represent yourself and the decisions you make. You have to be very upfront with people. And sometimes I'll tell people, even as I'll give you an example, as INSPRA has a disclosure or consent waiver that we have to sign when you become an INSPRA officer. And we don't go out as INSPRA officers and endorse one product or one company. So I can do that with Carroll ISD. I can do that as Julie Thana, but I cannot do that as INSPRA president. So I think it's important for us to understand that, yes, we are put in positions like that, and understanding what your role is and what you're being asked to do and disclosing it are all key steps in making that an ethical situation.
Great. So we've got a couple more questions, but I think we've maybe only got time for one left here. This question is, what advice would you give to somebody who's transitioning from a teacher role to an assistant principal or administrative role?
Cool. Great question. Wow. I think one of the things you got to be careful of, and I've noticed sometimes with assistant principals and with teachers, that it's very similar to superintendent, leadership team, and school board. You're a team. And so when you're watching out for the good of the team, your role on the team becomes very, very important to the success of the whole team. So if you've come from, for instance, being a teacher and you're about to become someone's, and you basically what you're talking about is you've now become your colleague's boss in some sense. I think that can work well if you consistently make good decisions that are for the team. If you get in a role where you overexert your influence or your position, you can have backlash from your fellow teachers. I think it's hard for people to change that role. We've actually had people that have left the district and come back, and they are now their supervisors, the people they used to supervise. So think about that. That's a tough one right there. But you become your boss's boss or whatever, something like that. But think about that. That's a very difficult thing to be. But if you're making decisions in the best interest of the school district and as a team, you have the interests of other people. So you all know, and I know people that are about themselves only. And so if they are making all their decisions for the good of themselves, that's very difficult, whether you're the principal, the teacher, or otherwise. But if we're making decisions as a team, I think the two-way listening, the hearing all sides, being known as a person that is a centrist and can bring people together, that's what these jobs are. Our jobs in leadership are bringing people together, not just always compromising, but finding common ground. I always warn my assistant principals, be careful that you're not the person that the staff is going to sound off to about the principal. Because if they're sounding off about the principal, someday you can be the principal and your assistant principal could do that to you. And so I think a lot of it is just understanding everybody's role, that you're part of a team and working together. But I know that can be difficult sometimes when you're changing positions like that. And I think you just have to be careful that you're keeping the best interests of students and the best interests of the entire team, in the forefront of all decisions.
Excellent answer. And there's a lot of comments in the chat too, echoing a lot of those same sentiments. We are at the top of the hour, so I'm afraid I have to bring the Q&A to a close here, but I would invite you to keep this conversation running, keep it alive in the community engagement community forums. You can view those. There's a link in chat to this as well at edweb.net/engagement. We'd love to see those conversations keep moving along and really good comments here. We've been honored to provide you with this professional development webinar for the EdWeb community. If you would like additional best practices, we encourage you to download our social media ebook. It's packed with tips and tricks for effectively leveraging social media. And I know we talked a lot about social media today, but using social media as a communication tool, not simply a community monitoring tool. Leaders from around the country, including Julie, have shared how they're making the most out of social media here. And so we'd invite you to download that using the link on the screen here or in the chat. Just want to, I know we've talked a lot here, but I want to give a big thank you to Julie for presenting on this topic. It's very timely and I think a topic that we're going to start hearing a lot more about. Thank you for doing this with us, Julie. Really appreciate your time here.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.